It's Jeff Levering for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Check out that effortless horizontal window slide and the best lifetime warranties in the industry. Order by April 30th and get 0% for 48 months at PellaWI.com.
Certain restrictions apply.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Come join the conversation on the Old National Bank talk and text line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank. Get old. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. Don't just listen. You can now also watch this program, The Jeff Wagner Show, and all of your favorite WTMJ shows. We are streaming live on video from our studios at The Avenue. You can watch online at WTMJ.com. You can watch on the mobile app. You can watch on the WTMJ YouTube page. Who knew? And on our social channels. Look while you listen with the WTMJ video stream. I checked in this morning because I was kind of curious how many people watched. And actually, we had several hundred. Now, yesterday was the first day, at least, we live streamed my program, and we had several hundred, I mean, close to 500 people who watched it just on the YouTube channel alone. I expect it will grow from there. But again, if you've got that, you can listen live, and that's very, very cool. But if you're sitting at your desk, all sorts of ways that you can stream the program live as well. My lovely wife said, okay, does this change the way you do your show? And I said, well, no, not really. She said, well, yeah, you better recognize that you're on camera now. So well, what do you think I'm going to do? You know, she said, you just got to be careful about that because you might go scratch your nose and somebody might interpret that as something different. So I said, okay, I'll try to be careful about that. But you can watch the shows on a daily basis as well, and we enjoy that quite a bit. Okay, we have a lot of very serious, what I would describe as weighty topics that we are going to discuss during the course of the program today. We start off with one that I think I found it to be incredibly interesting. I acknowledge at the outset, it is not the most significant topic of the day, but it struck me as an interesting topic because I suspect it's something that we're all going to have an opinion on. And my lead into this is, you know, when you go on Twitter or on social media and you're thinking about venting about something, it's always my advice that you want to perhaps just wait a couple seconds before you hit the send button. I had a professor in law school. His name was Jim Giardi, just a great, great man. And this is before I was in law school, of course, before Al Gore invented the internet, before we had email and stuff. And back then you actually wrote letters to each other. And Jim's advice, and I remember getting this in class, and it always stayed with me, was there will be things that happen that to you as you're practicing law that you get angry about. And you know, what I recommend you do is you can write that letter to the other side, blasting them for whatever. And he said, my recommendation is, though, after you finish it and after you get it typed up, what you do is just take that letter and put it in your desk drawer overnight. And my guess is when you look at it again that next morning, you'll have rethought. You won't be quite as angry. You won't have that flash anger. And you'll have rethought at least some of the positions, which I think it always served me very well. Well, nowadays, you know, we don't write letters anymore. We just go on our emails or we go to Twitter or we go to Facebook or whatever, and we write whatever we're going to write on there. And then we just hit send and then it is out there. And every once in a while, I think maybe you want to pause. So here is the story I want to discuss with you. There is a guy named Anthony Bass. He is a professional baseball player. He's a relief pitcher now for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's not having a particularly great year, but I don't think that necessarily informs his decision. So here's the story. His wife is 22 months pregnant. She's traveling on United Airlines the other day with their two other children. One is 5, one is 2. So it's the three of them. It's 22-week pregnant woman, and she's got the two kids. So they're on United Airlines. The flight attendant, apparently sometime during the flight, you know, they're passing out, you know, the sodas, and they come by with their, you know, pretzels or whatever. And the flight attendant, you know, at the request of the mom, gives the two-year-old daughter some popcorn, right? So it's a little one of those little things of popcorn. And the two-year-old apparently dumps the popcorn out all over the floor. So makes a mess. Now, it could have been a worse mess. It's not like she poured a juice box over there, but she's dumped the popcorn all over the floor. The flight attendant, who's got like a million things going on, the flight attendant apparently looks to mom, the relief pitcher's wife, and says something to the effect of, ma'am, you've got to clean up after your kid, because the kid has made a mess. So mom gets off the plane, and mom is outraged that she has been told that she has to clean up the popcorn that her kid has spilled all over the floor of the airplane. At which point in time, after she relates this story to Anthony Bass, he decides to go on to Twitter, and he decides that he is going to rip United Airlines. This is what he writes. The flight attendant at United just made my 22-week pregnant wife traveling with a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old get on her hands and knees to pick up the popcorn mess by my youngest daughter. Are you kidding me? How dare she make my wife clean up after the mess that our kid has made? So he puts that out there on Twitter, and needless to say, there's not necessarily a lot of sympathy for his position. One person responds back and says, well, okay, who do you think should have cleaned it up? And he says, well, that's what United has flight crews for. They had cleaning crews, you know, in the airports. They should be responsible for cleaning up the mess my child has made. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. Let's start the program with this question. Okay, the lady's on the plane. She's traveling with the two kids. One of the kids, like, pours the popcorn all over the floor of the plane, makes a mess. The flight attendant says, ma'am, could you clean up? Would you clean up after your child? And she apparently does. If she had refused to do it, I don't know what would have happened. But this guy is upset that the flight attendant asked her, that would be his wife, to clean up after the mess that her child had made on the plane. Was that an unreasonable request? 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Should the Toronto Blue Jays pitcher maybe have thought a minute before he hit send to vent about this? Or is he right? Was United unreasonable in asking and having a flight attendant expect the lady whose kid had made the mess to kind of pick up after her own kid? 855-616-1620. We discuss in just a moment. 855-616-1620. Okay, so if you're just tuning in, here's the deal. She's the wife of a Toronto Blue Jays pitcher. He has chosen to go public with this story. She is 22 weeks pregnant. She's on an airplane with their 5-year-old and their 2-year-old. The 2-year-old has one of those bags of popcorn or something and apparently, like, dumps it out all over the floor, makes a mess. The flight attendant comes by and says, ma'am, you know, it's words to the effect of, you need to clean up after, can you clean up after your kid? And the woman gets offended that she's been asked to clean up after her 2-year-old child. He then, this is the pitcher who's not with them, he goes on Twitter ripping United Airlines. And needless to say, well, the response he's getting is not incredibly positive. Somebody says, well, what do you think should have happened? Well, that's why they have cleaning crews. That's why they have cleaning crews. It's their job. You can't expect parents to clean up after their kids. All right, 855-616-1620. Let's start with Mary Jo in Waukesha. Mary Jo, you're first. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
What do you think?
Hi, how are you?
I am well. Okay, what do you think on this?
As a former United Airlines flight attendant for 9 years, I can tell you this is outrageous. Who does this guy think he is? And in 5 years, he's going to be, you know, washing cars. So that does not give him the right to demand or say that we are supposed to clean up after his mess. And second of all, yes, we have cleaning crews, but not at every stop. That's right. Not the case.
Right.
And I can only imagine what their house must look like if this is what her attitude is when she's out in public with these kids.
Well, you know, I'm trying to imagine.
Shame on him and her.
So, all right. So you're in this. I'm sure stuff like this probably happens sometime or other over the course of 9 years. So you see this. You've got the kid who's just made the mess there. I mean, how would you have handled a situation like this?
I would have said exactly the same thing. If could you please clean up after your child? It's not our responsibility to do that. And second of all, if she doesn't see the mess that this kid has made, I mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm at a loss for words, quite frankly.
Well, you know, it is interesting, Mary Jo, that I do kind of wonder where mom is when you see the two-year-old starting to make the mess, you know, starting to spill the popcorn or whatever. Isn't that the time where maybe you say, don't do that, or you take the popcorn away from the kid before it gets to the full mess stage? And apparently she didn't do that at all.
Absolutely. And I believe you said that the woman is 22 years old.
No, she's 22.
Correct?
No, she's 22 months pregnant.
She already has a...
She's 22 months pregnant.
22 months pregnant.
22 weeks pregnant. Right.
So,
22 weeks.
There we go. And she's traveling with two kids, yes?
Yes.
A five-year-old and a two-year-old.
Yep.
And totally out of control. First of all, she isn't old enough to wipe her own nose. And second of all, she probably has had no social training whatsoever. And total disrespect.
Okay.
Total disrespect.
Okay, thanks for the call, Mary Jo. We're going to put you down as a firm, not sympathetic to the pitcher and his wife. 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Let's talk to Bill in Racine County. Bill, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Jeff, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so mom is drop-dead gorgeous. She doesn't even begin to look like she's 22 months pregnant.
Right.
Well, beautiful woman, no doubt about it. The stewardess is having a bad day. Let's let things slide.
Yeah.
That makes sense to you?
Oh, it does. No, thanks for calling. I'm amazed at the outrage and this kind of sense of entitlement that this pitcher has, that he would be offended by somebody saying, ma'am, can you clean up after your child? Now, she then did. One of the other questions, and a couple of our texters are raising this, is even if you've let her make the mess, why don't you have the five-year-old clean it up? I mean, if the idea is, well, you know, she expected me to get down on my hands and knees and clean up the mess, why don't you say to the five-year-old, hey, you go pick up this popcorn? Jeff, I was a former Disney World cast member. Here's the deal. I think that, first of all, in any normal person would try and clean up the mess. I have a two-year-old, and if he makes a mess, the first person to try to clean it up is me. Add to that the fact that these planes are so quickly turned around at airports, sometimes they don't have the time to clean. I guess, I'm trying to think, let's take it out of the airplane context. So let's imagine you're at a restaurant. You're at a family restaurant with, you know, the kids. And, you know, you have your two-year-old or your three-year-old or your four-year-old who's got the crackers and who's just like crumbling them up and throwing them on the floor or whatever you want to do. I mean, at some point in time, don't you as the parents have this obligation to try to, you know, intervene and stop the kid from, you know, making the mess? Now, I understand it's slightly different because maybe you can make the argument that that kind of comes into the category of the waitress having to clean up after you leave. But still, you'd think the parents would make that start. For me, the flight attendants, and maybe I'm just sympathetic to this, and it comes back to what happens with air travel a lot. I mean, the flight attendants have a lot going on. Yes, they're there to serve you the popcorn and serve you the soda, but they're also there to make sure everybody gets on safely, that everybody gets off safely. It's not necessarily their job. It's not their job to clean up after a mess that a two-year-old makes that is otherwise preventable. And again, the idea of the cleaning crew, that was the first thing I thought of a lot of times I'm getting on flights that are connecting flights. In other words, they're flights that are, okay, the flight is coming in, it's St. Louis to Fort Myers, and then they get everybody off the plane, and then as quick as they can, they board the plane, and they get you back to, then that's the Milwaukee flight. Well, I'm trying to imagine, okay, we're going to delay that flight, you know, 20 minutes because we've got to get a cleaning crew that's going to come in there to clean up after this kid has made a mess. I don't think it's the flight attendant's job. Yes, you've got the ground crew, but I don't think it's unreasonable, at least in my opinion, to say clean up in the first place. Let's talk to Michelle in Grafton. Michelle, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Well, Jeff, it's like when you have a husband and he says, why do you keep asking me to do that? And you say, because I shouldn't have to. Well, the flight attendant should never have had to say to her, you know, why can't you pick this? The mother should just automatically do it. Also, you can say to a five-year-old, oh, help mommy do this. Look what little Johnny
made. Yeah.
big mess. And the five-year-old will always help and say, Mommy, we'll give you an extra treat to help Mommy do this, you know. I mean, there's so many ways to avoid it. And so much is being made out of this. Who cares, you know what I mean, for Pete's sake? I'm sure she's a spoiled little mother who doesn't think anybody. She probably has a lot of help at home and people clean up after her. But, I mean, flight attendants aren't there to remind the passengers about what they should and shouldn't be doing. That's ridiculous.
Right. Or to clean up in these. Look, now I understand that there's situations where the flight attendants might get involved. Let's say somebody gets sick on the plane. Okay, that's something, but that's not what this is. This is a child that's made a mess that is easily cleanable. And the woman apparently cops this attitude about, well, how dare you even ask me to clean it up? Now, apparently she did, but the ball player was offended that they would even ask her to do this. I mean, maybe the other answer is, you know, if you're just going to let your kids be out of control on airplanes and making messes like this, you know, maybe that's what you need to do is buy this. You shouldn't be traveling by yourself. And maybe you bring the nanny along or something like that and then have the nanny clean up after the child. But I mean, I was thinking about this story and I'm thinking, man, I don't want to be sitting at a restaurant table next to these people. Or you do wonder what goes on at the house. Well, okay, so-and-so has just made a mess. I'm going to let the kid make a mess and then I'm going to expect somebody else to kind of pick it up. And look, I understand also sometimes this kind of stuff happens. What really set this off though, and going back to the way we started the segment is if you want to talk about entitled, I mean, maybe reasonable people can disagree about whether or not the flight attendant should have asked the mom to clean up after the mess the kid made. Maybe reasonable people can disagree about that. But I think it's so interesting that in this case that the ball player was so outraged by this that he thought, I'm going to take to Twitter because I want to rip United Airlines on social media for the way they treated my family. And I think he was very, very surprised that the vast majority of responses, not all, but the vast majority of responses were not too terribly sympathetic. Most people saying, hey, it's your kid. Your kid makes a mess. Why don't you clean up after your kid or stop your kid from making a mess in the first place? Neither one of those positions, I think, is particularly unreasonable. Okay, so Eric Bilstadt, we are live streaming the shows now. And so it's opened up this whole different universe because I know that I was just amazed at how many people, like, chose to watch part of the show yesterday. But now I'm getting comments about, like, your clothing and stuff. Like, one of our listeners just said, cool pullover. It's very nice coordination job with the water, with the button down.
You know? Look very nice today, Jeff.
Well, my point was my wife dresses me. You know, that's that's it. But it's like, okay, this is this other world out there now. People are going to be saying, all right, how did you do that? Well, right, if you don't like the way I've dressed, obviously I got out of the house without my wife seeing me. But otherwise, you know, Fran dresses me. So very glad to have you with us. Just one final thought on what we were talking about in the last segment of the program regarding to what the obligations are of people to clean up after their kids. Jeff, I was a commercial pilot. One of my pet peeves was going back and seeing parents allowing their kids to ravage the cabin. If my flight attendants had an issue, I had no problem sorting it out with the wayward parents. There is a chance the child in this case might just have dropped the bag and it spilled. In that case, the mom might have been insulted that the flight attendant called her out. I'm sorry, but the flight attendant has a job to do, and it's not to mind your kid's business. I have no sympathy for the mom. Life happens. This is a dad of four who is speaking. I get it, but you really need to get over it. All right, here is the story, and it goes back to one of the principal arguments I have been making for decades. If you run from the police, bad things happen. Nothing ever good comes of that. And I've always made this argument. If you think you've been wrongly pulled over by the cops, fine. Let them give you the ticket. Let them give you the citation. You always have a remedy. You hire a lawyer. You go to court. You file a complaint. You go on Twitter, whatever. But you always make it worse when you escalate the situation. Arguing and getting belligerent with a police officer is never, ever going to help you. And many times it hurts you. But nowadays, it seems to me the default position on so many people is we're going to run. That's it. We're not going to pull over. We're just going to take off. And once you make that decision, you open the doors for all sorts of bad things to happen, which brings me to this story, June 27th of last year, Akron, Ohio. Right? What happens is there's a 25-year-old black man named Jalen Walker. Right? So Jalen Walker is driving his car. The police see the car, and apparently he's got a broken taillight and a broken light on his rear license plate. They decide to pull the guy over because of these equipment violations. He takes off, all right, doesn't pull over. The police make the decision at that point in time that they're not going to chase him. So they let him drive off. All right, about 10 minutes later, the same intersection, they see the car again that has run from them. This time they decide, okay, we've now seen this car again. We're going to pull them over. So they put on the bubble lights. They start to pursue. Instead of, again, stopping, getting the ticket for whatever, you know, the lights out or whatever, Walker refuses to stop and takes off. So now this time the police decide to chase. About 40 seconds into the pursuit, Walker fires a shot from his moving car at the police. So you got the police car behind him. This guy like leans out the, he's driving and he leans out the window and he fires a shot at the pursuing police. Okay, well, now you've taken what is an equipment violation and a fleeing, and now you've got a guy who's shooting at the cops. And all bets at this point in time are off. Officers chase the car on a freeway and on city streets until Walker bails out of the vehicle. He doesn't even stop the car. It's still moving. He jumps out of the car. He's wearing a ski mask, all right? And he runs into the parking lot. You have a number of police officers that are chasing him, and they're all screaming, stop, stop, show us your hands, stop. He continues to run. At one point in time, now several police officers are chasing him. He's ignoring their commands to stop. He's ignoring their commands to show his hands. He then reaches towards his waistband and raises his hand as officers are chasing. At that point in time, a number of the officers, they then shoot. Matter of fact, there were a total of like somewhere over 40 bullets that were fired because you had several of these officers who were chasing him. They all start to fire once they see the guy, you know, reach into his waistband and start to turn. They shoot, they kill him. It turns out that he did not have his gun with him. He had a gun, had a loaded gun, and he had in fact fired a shot at the police officers, but he left the gun in the car when he started to run away. But the police officers, of course, did not know that he had, you know, left the handgun with a loaded magazine in the car because they're chasing him. All they see is him refusing to stop. He's running. He's got the ski mask on. He reaches into his waistband and starts to turn around, and they shoot. And a number of the officers shot, like I say, it was over 40 bullets. So, of course, because of the racial component of this, you have a number of people in Akron who are just outraged by this, and the argument is this is another example of the execution of a black man by the police officers and things like that. So the district attorney presents this to the grand jury to make a decision as to whether any or all of the officers should be charged. And the decision that the grand jury reaches yesterday is no charges. No charges brought against the officers. And the general argument in the police union says, look, the officers, having been shot at once by this guy who was fleeing, thought there was an immediate threat of serious harm, and they shot him, and they shot him repeatedly because officers are taught. It's not like the movies where you fire the one shot, you try to wing them, or you try to, like, get the gun to fly out of their hand. You're taught that when you shoot, you shoot to end the threat. So these officers fired multiple times. He ended up dying. The grand jury says, no, we do not believe there is a basis to bring criminal charges against the officers. There will, of course, be a civil lawsuit, but that's a different story. Our number is 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. All right, here is my question. Is justice being done here? should criminal charges have been brought against the multiple officers who were pursuing this man who was fleeing from them, and in the course of fleeing from them, he had, of course, fired a shot at them. So, under these circumstances, was it an unreasonable position for them, believing he still had his gun with him and believing that he was turning, at least the concern was he was going to turn and fire? All right, did they err? Were they wrong? Should they be criminally charged for shooting him? 855-616-1620. We discuss in a moment. Inflation, the return of the bear, 2023 sectors, and answering all your questions about it. Join Dave Spano from Annex Wealth Management, along with Wisconsin's Afternoon News host, John Mercure, for a special webinar, Inflation, Rate Hikes, and Bears, Oh My! Kind of like lions and tigers and bears, oh my, on Wednesday, April 19th at 11 a.m. You can register for this free webinar at WTMJ.com. Click on the Features tab and visit the Annex Wealth Management webinar page. Look, I feel safe in saying that nobody or almost nobody in law enforcement ever relishes the need to, the desire to, or takes any enjoyment in pulling out their weapon and using lethal force. They don't. But this is one of those situations where you have cops that have to make a split-second decision. And in this particular situation in Akron, Ohio, it really is. What do you expect the police officers to do? You've got a guy in a ski mask who has been fleeing, first of all, in a car, who fired a shot at the pursuing officers. He is now fleeing. He is refusing instructions to stop, drop, raise your hands, or whatever. He reaches into his waistband and starts to turn. And, yes, a number of the officers who are chasing him, then they discharge their firearms, and they hit him multiple times. But they're shooting because they believe he has a gun. All right, grand jury in Akron, Ohio yesterday says, no, we don't believe they committed a crime. Did they get it right? Let's start with Danny in Janesville. Danny, you're on WTMJ.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Good. Did the grand jury get it right?
Of course they did. Your story irritated me for two reasons. One, it's like, okay, have these people ever seen an episode of Cops? So it doesn't matter if you're black, red, yellow, or green. If you run from the cops, you're going to get what you deserve, whether it be a pit maneuver or thrown to the pavement. Now, when you show a gun, or even worse, shoot at a cop, okay, that's pretty much a death sentence.
Well,
you know, if you're not shot and killed, you're going to be hurt badly. Now, the part that irked me other than that was what you said about a possible civil suit. And it's like, okay, if the cops did something wrong, fine, but it's like, where's the accountability? The person pulled out a gun and fired at the cops.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, come on, it's fair game.
Well, I mean, thanks for calling. I mean, look, and look, you're still here. I mean, under the law, your police officers are only allowed to use lethal force when they believe that they are their life or the life of somebody else is in danger. But in these sort of circumstances, that's why if he had been surrendering, okay, he shot at the cops before, he pulls over the side of the road, he gets out with his hands up, okay, then somebody shoots him, that's a whole different story. But that's not what happened in this case. What happened is, he's wearing the ski mask, he bails on the car, he starts from the car, he starts running, he is not complying with the police instructions. The police don't know that the gun that was used to take a shot at them a while back is back in the car. They think he's got the gun, they think he's getting ready to turn. And in these situations, I don't understand how, I don't think it's fair to say that the police should be doing something different. They don't, and I say this, what, 2 weeks after, you know, two Wisconsin law enforcement officers lost their life in a routine traffic stop, I don't think you have to wait until somebody shoots and kills a police officer before they're able to return fire. Jeff, after hearing the story, it's amazing that none of the other officers were injured or killed. I believe the death of this man should be placed on his shoulders. All he had to do was stop. Well, that's right. All he had to do was stop, which is why if you listen to so many of the stories that we talk about on a regular basis on this program, it is by running, you escalate the situation and you always make it worse. And for whatever reason nowadays, everybody runs. There's a story, maybe we'll get to it, maybe not, later on today about somebody else running from the police, blows through a red light, hits and seriously injures, you know, somebody else when they crash their car. when you make that decision that you are going to run, much less pulling out a gun and taking a pot shot at the police who are chasing you, you've got to recognize that this bad stuff is going to happen. You've taken a bad situation, you've made it worse. A number of people on our text line are speculating about whether this sounds almost like a suicide by cop sort of thing, which you do wonder. The behavior is so beyond the pale. In a situation like this, where you've got multiple cops that are chasing you, you fired a shot at them, they're telling you to stop, they're telling you to raise your hands, and you refuse to do it, it's almost like you wonder, was the guy trying to prompt something like this? Mike in Illinois. Mike, good afternoon. You're on WTMJ.
Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
I am well. What do you think about all this?
Well, obviously, always tragic when somebody is shot by anyone. But I believe the grand jury got it right. If he had not fired shots at the cops already, it would have been a lot more gray. Because anytime a cop sees mm-hmm. he's running from them, not listening to their commands, they reach for a waistband, are going to turn around. We had something similar that happened in Chicago not that long ago. I mean, that's a judgment call. But he's already fired at them.
Yep.
I mean, so most reasonable people would assume, if he's reaching into his waistband, turning around, he's going to fire again. As I said, always tragic, but I think the grand jury got it right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, and it is a tragic situation, and it is. But these are the type of situations where you have to put yourself in the perspective, in my opinion, of law enforcement officers, which is you have to make a split second decision, and in many cases, that split second decision. If, for example, if you didn't think the guy had a gun, this is a different sort of story. If the guy hadn't fired a shot at the police, it's a different story. If somebody had known right away that the gun was not on his person, that you see him get out of the car, drop the gun, and then he's running, and you know it's two blocks later, and you know the gun's been dropped, that's a different story. But none of those things are present here. So there's this whole issue about, okay, is Akron going to explode with people protesting and things like this? And I understand that there is the racial element to it. I do not know the races of the eight police officers who were involved. I don't know if it was all white cops or all black cops or some mix or whatever. But all I know is in this particular case, while some people might want to see this racially, I'm not even sure they knew the race of the individual because he was wearing a ski mask at the time. All you know is you've got somebody you try to pull over for a routine thing who's fled from you, who's taken a pot shot at you, and is now running away from you. What do you expect the police to do? Now, some people are saying, well, you know, he was shot 40-plus times. Well, that's because you have a number of the officers who were chasing him. Once they thought he was going to fire on him, they all opened fire. I mean, it was kind of like the ending scene at Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. They all opened fire. But police officers are taught that you shoot until you end the threat. So, yes, there were a lot of bullets that were fired, but that's how they're taught. If you're allowed to use lethal force, you use enough lethal force to make sure that the guy is down, and that's what happened here. And I guess to me it doesn't make too much difference whether he was shot, 40 times or whether he was shot 8 times or whatever. None of this happens if he doesn't resist arrest.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. So very glad to have you with us. Again, a quick reminder, you can listen to us live. There's a number of ways to do that. And I know people go on our app, on the mobile app, or WTMJ.com, and you can hit the listen live button. But in addition, now we are live streaming, and you can watch the shows live as well. So all you have to do is, you can go to WTMJ.com, and there's a new button that says Watch Live. There's the mobile app. There's the WTMJ YouTube page. We have a YouTube page. Matter of fact, this morning I was kind of playing around on one of our TVs down here, and I was able to actually tracked down the broadcast from yesterday's show, and I saw that hundreds and hundreds of people had checked in and watched us on YouTube. How cool is that? And our social channels. Look while you listen with the WTMJ video stream. Also, there is, of course, the podcast page. It's just, I always sort of forget about that, but I know that that's the way a lot of you listen to us. I was saying, I was at the gym on Saturday morning, and there's a guy on the treadmill, and he says, "You're Jeff Wagner." And I said, "I am." And he said, "I'm listening to your show right now." And I said, "Boom, that's kind of spooky." You know, it is, but that's how a lot of people take it in. So whether it's the podcast page, the live stream, we are everywhere. You just can't get away from us. That's kind of the rules. All right. Here is the story. It's making national news. It happened last Thursday night in Kansas City, Missouri. It involves a 16-year-old young man. His name is Ralph Yarl. And to the extent that some people want to make this a racial issue or see a racial component to it, he is black. The story is that he is tasked. It's about 10:30 at night. And his parents say to him, "Look, we need you to go pick up your brother and sister, your brothers or whatever, two of your siblings. They're over at a friend's house, and we need you to go to pick them up." And they tell them, "Okay, this is where the kids are. They are at a residence on 115th Terrace in Kansas City." And I guess this is kind of like, you know, sometimes you get, there'll be like 115th court, and there'll be 115th street, and there'll be 115th circle. Instead of going to 115th Terrace, he goes to a residence on 115th street, which is a block away. All right, so he's gone to the wrong house. So what he does is he goes up to the house. In his story, what he says is he goes up, he rings the doorbell, And he waits from somewhere between 3 and 5 minutes, and then the door opens up. Now, this is what the kid says. It says, then he saw a man appear. The homeowner, according to the teen's recollection, said something about not wanting him to come around anymore and opened fire on the boy's face from behind a screened glass door. Two shots. One shot hits him in the head. Another shot hits him in the arm as he goes down. Okay, the prosecutor says, well, that's what the victim says. We're not sure that there were actually any words exchanged. The guy who is behind the door is an 84-year-old man named Andrew Lester. Okay, according to the criminal complaint, this is what Lester says happened. He said he had just laid down in his bed when he heard the doorbell, and he went to the door. He said his house has an interior door and an exterior storm door. He opened the interior door and saw a black male that he perceived to be 6 feet tall pulling on the storm door. He said that he was afraid someone was trying to break into the house. He opened fire from his Smith & Wesson .32 caliber pistol within seconds of opening the door. The kid in his statement says he didn't pull on the door. He said he was shot immediately. All right, so that's kind of the circumstances behind this. Missouri has what they call stand your ground and the castle doctrine laws. Those laws don't require individuals to retreat when they perceive a threat, but you cannot act in self-defense unless there exists a reasonable fear of deadly force or assault. The prosecutors are saying the act of knocking on a door or ringing a doorbell would not be a justifiable reason for using deadly force. Under the law, you have to do more than just say, "I feel threatened." You have to prove that something threatening was actually going on. He has now been charged with a Class A felony in Missouri, which is one of the most serious ones. It carries up to 30 years in prison. Sentencing ranges 10 to 30 years. He's 84 years old. So effectively, if he is convicted of this, it's going to be a life sentence. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. I think that's kind of a fair recitation of events. The 16-year-old kid was not armed. He says there was a brief exchange. The homeowner says there wasn't. Homeowner says he was trying to pull on the storm door. Kid says, no, that never happened. They just opened the door and he shot. All right, let's tee this up. Should the 84-year-old man be charged under these circumstances? 855-616-1620. I'll tell you where I come down on this, and we'll discuss. What do you think? 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Back with your calls and texts in just a moment. My producer, Charlie, makes the point. He says that when he's planning to break into people's residences, he rarely rings the doorbell or knocks on the front door first. And there's no question that That's what happened. This, if you're just tuning in, this is the genesis of what happened last Thursday night in Kansas City. The 16-year-old kid, he's told by his parents, hey, go pick up your brothers or your brother and sister or whatever, your siblings. And he goes to the wrong address. He goes to 115th Terrace instead of 115th Street. So he's a block away. The story is he goes up, he rings the doorbell, he knocks on the door, he waits for a couple minutes. 84-year-old man comes to the door and shoots him. And the 84-year-old man says, I felt threatened. I saw this 6-foot-tall, you know, black man that was outside the door. He says the homeowner's story is he was pulling on the screen door. I don't know. The kid says, no, I didn't touch anything. I was just standing there waiting for somebody to come to the door. I tend to believe that the kid's response in this particular situation. So anyhow, the man, the homeowner, has now been charged. 855-616-1620. What do you think? Let's start with John on the north side. John, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, buddy. Yeah, the guy should be charged because now he was in the house safe. A guy comes to his door. The guy is outside.
Yep.
He don't see a gun or anything. So really, he got time to dial 911 if he's afraid. You know, tell him somebody's breaking in his house. And he still got the gun, so he got plenty of time to shoot the guy. That was stupid. You know, that wasn't good.
Well, it's not just not only good, but I'm with you. I mean, I think I'm going to take it the next day. It's criminal. You can't shoot somebody just because they knock on your door or that they ring your doorbell. And right now, you're exactly right. If he opens the door and the guy's got a gun or the guy's got an axe and it looks like he's trying to cave in the door, that's a whole different situation. But this is a 16-year-old unarmed kid.
He don't have to open the door at all.
Right.
The guy's behind the door.
Right.
You know, if the guy breaks in, then there it is. You know,
right.
So that was a bad shot.
No, I'm with you. See, that there's so many different things that the 84-year-old guy could have done. And even if his story is, well, he was trying to pull on the door, you're exactly right, John. He wasn't in the house. So what do? You then take a step, even assuming that's what happened, and I have serious doubts as to whether that's really what happened. I suspect maybe the 84-year-old guy was a little bit, you know, he'd gone to bed, so he's a little bit groggy about those things. But yeah, the kid, even if he was trying to pull on the door, and I don't think I'm just going through the facts. I wasn't there. It sounds to me it's more likely that he's there to pick up his siblings. You know, he's just waiting for somebody to open the door. I doubt he was trying to force his way in. That doesn't make any sense. But even so, you're right. The homeowner, all he has to do, he's got the gun. All he has to do is take 2 steps back. And if the kid does actually force his way in through the door, well, then you can shoot him when he's coming through the threshold. He never did that. He was always outside. No, I think this is a bad shooting. And, you can't just shoot somebody because they ring your doorbell at 10:30 at night, absent more. Let's talk to Barbara in Oak Creek. Barbara, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
I believe the man should be charged. I'm 83. I understand his fears and his worries. However, you don't do that. What the other gentleman said was true. All you do is shut the inside door, call 911, and say you're threatened, okay?
Right.
But he should be charged, maybe not to the max, and I'm saying that because of his age, but
yeah.
He has to be charged. What he did was criminal.
Yeah, no, Barbara, thanks. I'm with you. And now the good news about this is he didn't kill the kid. I mean, that's the kid's in a hospital, but he's going to recover. Actually, his aunt started a GoFundMe page for him. And as of yesterday evening, it had raised like $1.8 million in a GoFundMe page for this. But it is clearly an unjustified shooting. And look, I believe, and if you listen to this program on a regular basis, I'm a big advocate of self-defense and things like that. But in this particular circumstance, there was no imminent threat to the man. It's not like it's 3 o'clock in the morning and the kid has walked into the house and you find somebody in your living room at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's not it. It's not like the kid was into the home at all. The homeowner had the gun. There was no reason to shoot. It sounds like to me what happened is he's disturbed from his sleep. He opens the door. He sees some stranger on the threshold, and he panics, and he fires a couple times. You cannot do that. You cannot do that absent more, and there doesn't appear to be much more here. Eric in McHenry. Eric, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with the other two. Owning a firearm has accountability along with it, and then he needs to be held accountable for the actions that he took. But like Barb said, I don't know that you need to sentence and convict the guy to jail. You need to convict him of what he did. But that's where judicial leeway comes in. You don't send 84-year-old people to prison for 20 years. You know, this is a case where nothing is going to change the circumstances of what happened. You're right. Nobody died. But, you know, being charged and losing the firearm as a result of that is probably appropriate in this case.
Yeah, no, thanks. That is an interesting situation. I would not be surprised once you take the politics out of this, and the politics are there's some people again who are trying to racialize this as unfortunately we do so often in this country. And I mean, can I tell you, is the guy, if it had been a 16-year-old white kid at the doorstep, would he have been as likely to shoot as if it was a 16-year-old black kid? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to necessarily know about that. But I think, you know, once you kind of take the people are protesting and all this stuff away from this, the most reasonable resolution is something. I think he needs to be charged. Does he need to be charged with a 30-year felony? I don't know. There needs to be some sort of penalty. But I do agree with what you're talking about. What do you gain by putting him in prison for the next 10 or 20 years? Do you deter other people from this behavior? Well, no, I don't know that this is the type of situation that's going to happen very often. Jeff, we have a similar address situation, and it can be quite frustrating, as many times people will often get our addresses mixed up. I can't help but feel that this happened with him as well, and he should know that the young man was simply at the wrong home. Yeah, and if you really do feel threatened, the kid is still out on the front porch, then you don't open the door. What you do is you call the police and you say, I think I've got this intruder that's out there or whatever. You call 911. You know, even with the stand your ground and the castle doctrine, you cannot be the one that causes the stuff that gives rise to your need to use lethal force. I mean, this is a no-win situation, and it's a terrible thing that ended up happening. But I go back to this basic premise. You can't shoot somebody simply because they ring your doorbell at 10:30 at night. You can choose not to answer the door at 10:30 at night. If they then try to break into your house, that's a whole different story. But just because somebody rings the doorbell doesn't give you the right to shoot them through the door, period. 84, 54, 24, 14, to me, it doesn't matter the age. Okay, so a number of people are texting in saying, why wasn't he arrested? Why wasn't the 84-year-old guy arrested right away? And the answer was, he was, and then he was released, and now he's being rearrested. But what happens in Missouri is they have a rule that says that you can be held in custody for up to 24 hours while a charging decision is being made. So this happens late at night on a Thursday night. He's taken into custody right away. He's held in custody on Friday while the DA's office starts to investigate this. Now, while I believe he should be charged, at the same time, this is an 84-year-old guy who is not a flight risk. He's not going anywhere, and he's not a danger to the community in that generally accepted sense. I mean, he's got no criminal record. The only reason he's a danger is because of the facts of this particular circumstance. So what happened is, on Friday, I think the DA's office wasn't in a position to make a decision as to, was this legitimately self-defense? You know, we want to get their statements. We want to evaluate this. So they had to release him under the law. Then over the weekend, they take a look at this. Now, I understand there's also the political element there. They got protests and stuff. But they take a look at this, and they look at the facts, and they look at the circumstances, and they say, no, we've got a basis for bringing charges. So they reissue charges, yesterday. I mean, they bring the formal complaint, formal charges. There's a warrant out for his arrest. I believe he's been arrested. You know, preliminary bail is set at $200,000, which I suspect will be reduced dramatically because, again, he's not a danger. He's not a flight risk. He's not going anywhere. But for people who are wondering, well, why wasn't he taken into custody in the beginning? That I think, is probably what ended up happening. They needed more than that 24 hours in this case to determine whether or not they felt that it was an appropriate case to bring charges, because they had to evaluate, okay, is there a legitimate self-defense claim here? Is there a legitimate Castle Doctrine claim? Is there a legitimate stand your ground claim? And given the fact that, once again, it's an 84-year-old guy who isn't going to flee anywhere, who has no criminal record, at least that's my understanding, beyond this particular case, I think the DA's office said, okay, we're going to let him go. We're going to take a long look at this. They have now taken a look at it. They believe that there's charges that are appropriate. I think this is one where, you know, they bring these charges. My guess is, like I say, it's probably resolved with something less serious than what was brought, but there will be some consequences. But for people who are wondering, well, why was he released? I think that's it. They just weren't in a position to bring the charges under these circumstances within the first 24 hours, so they had to let him go. We've got a lot of stuff coming up in the next half hour of the program. Okay, so you're the assistant program director, right? That's what I saw last night?
That's what they tell me.
Okay, so now here, you know, we go out in the community. We broadcast from State Fair and stuff. Here, Crusher Fest, June 3rd and the 4th. Crusher Fest is back. Now, that's Saturday and Sunday, so I can't be doing my show there. But if they were there on Friday, maybe, you know, get out to the big talking studio and the mobile studio and broadcast from Crusher Fest.
You know who's had a real passion for Crusher Fest was our former colleague Gene Miller.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you know, they're going to have a bunch of older wrestlers that are there. Cowboy Bob Orton, he's going to be there signing autographs and stuff. No, it's Crusher Fest is back.
That's awesome.
Do you know who the Crusher is?
I do, but only because we did a series of stories on him when the memorials, the statue was being built.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very cool.
Well, it is, and it's, you know, from South Milwaukee and stuff. So he was very, very famous, and my brother-in-law is a regular at Crusher Fest. I have never made it, but, you know, this might be the year.
It's
June 3rd and 4th.
Beautiful, nice June day. Yeah, make it out.
Absolutely. Head on down to South Milwaukee. Okay, well, yeah, if it had been on a Friday, maybe we could have worked out a remote broadcast. But
you got the trailer down there and everything.
But it just didn't work out that way. But okay, maybe I'll be able to make it. Crusher Fest, June 3rd and 4th. When we come back, it was the party bus. Well, it wasn't the party bus from heaven. I will explain what happened and what the ramifications are. Don't go anywhere. All right. If you live around here, you get used to the news reports of, gee, it's a Friday night, 8 people were shot. Now, we get used to this, and sometimes I think we almost become numb to this. Oh, another night, 16-year-old shot, you know, 3 people shot, you know, 4 people shot. And unless it's, unfortunately, unless it's a spectacular sort of shooting, I think some of these don't even end up making the news. Oh, it's just another car chase or whatever. Well, nobody died in it, so, you know, ho-hum. That's one of the motivations behind our semi-regular feature, Tomorrow's Prisoners Today, so we don't get numb to the ongoing crime. But if you live in other communities, you're not necessarily used to that. And if you go to an event, you don't expect that you're necessarily going to find yourself in the middle of a gun battle. And yet that is precisely what happened to a group of people from Green Bay. If you haven't heard this story, of course, over the weekend, country singer Morgan Wallen had 2, I think, largely sold out concerts at American Family Field, Friday and Saturday night. So Saturday night, there's a group of Morgan Wallen fans who live in the Green Bay area, and they decide, hey, we want to come down, we want to see the show. But, you know, we don't want to drive. We want to be able to have a few beers. You know, we don't want to worry about that. So it's called Lou's Limos. They hire a party bus, right? And it's kind of like a big van. So they hire this van. Hey, drive us down. And, you know, that's,
I don't know about you, but I have gone to concerts in that fashion, or I've gone to events, and it's kind of nice. It's like you rent the thing, then you don't have to worry about the hassle. Somebody else is going to do the driving. So, I mean, I've done that before. So this group, I think it's about a dozen people, they rent what we'll call the party bus from Lou's Limos. This is Saturday. So they come down, Lou's Limos picks them up in the Green Bay area. They drive down. They get to American Family Field. They see the Morgan Wallen show. Everybody has a good time. And now it's time to come home. So what happens is what we'll call the party bus is getting ready to get on the freeway. It's around 35th and Wisconsin. You know, and there's, I mean, 27th Street, you with 27th to Wisconsin, you go south, you pick up the freeway. So I'm not sure exactly where they're planning to get on, but they're on 35th in Wisconsin, headed for the interstate around midnight. And according to one of the co-owners, he's driving the bus, and he sees people running, and then he hears gunshots. Okay, this is 35th and Wisconsin. He looks over and sees a passenger in a car next to the bus leaning out the window and pointing a gun, at which point he screams to his passengers, there's a dozen of them, get down. And then he steps on the gas while avoiding people and other vehicle crashes. Meanwhile, the guy who's leaning out the car with the gun starts shooting. The bus driver, who's the owner of one of the co-owners of the company, says it was like a movie. And there's pictures that they have provided. The bus, it was, in fact, struck by gunfire. A window was damaged. A bullet mark on a seat cushion. One single bullet traveled through the bus. Due to the damage, the bus is unusable because they have to figure out how to replace the windows that are specifically designed for the bus. They say also we've got a problem with the engine, and we're wondering if, you know, that was damaged when we had to gun it to try to, you know, get away. But he screams, get down. And then you have a number of the passengers who hit the floor. And what they're talking about is they're saying, well, you know, it might have been him screaming that caused us, if we hadn't have hit the floor, this bullet that busted out the glass window and went through the bus, you know, it might have, you know, killed somebody. The co-owner, if my husband wasn't attentive in telling us to get down, and if our driver didn't handle it professionally, things could have definitely ended differently. They call 911 once the bus comes to a halt. Milwaukee police say bullets also struck a nearby apartment building, but no one was hurt. One of the ladies who's there says, I think the biggest thing for me is going down to a concert, which I thought would be an excellent night and a great day with my friends, not really being aware of my surroundings, and then realize, wow, this happened to us. You never think it would happen to you. The folks who run this bus company, they've said, look, here's the deal. We're not traveling to Milwaukee at night anymore. We're just flat out not coming down. So, you know, you want to come to another concert, find a different bus service. You want to come to a Brewers game that ends at night, find a different bus service. We're not coming down anymore because we don't want our drivers, we don't want our passengers to get into a gun battle on 35th and Wisconsin. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. Look, if you live around here, we get used to it. You get used to these reports. Nobody likes it. People become outraged, but nobody does anything about it. But if you live outside the immediate area, and I understand the reach of this station, you have a lot of different choices. And whenever you have a story like this, I think more and more people hear it and say, you know what? I don't want anything to do with the Milwaukee area. I don't want anything to do with this because I don't want to come down, have a good time at a concert, and then get in a shootout on Wisconsin Avenue when I'm on the bus getting ready to go back to Green Bay. 855-616-1620, that's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Is crime and incidents like this, is this impacting your decision as to events to go to, where you travel, when you travel, etc.? This bus company says, we're not coming down here at night anymore. Sorry, we're not going to go through this. We're not going to take the risk. All right, my guess is there's a lot of other people that are making that same sort of decision. It's one of the effects of what happens when you have out-of-control crime. 855-616-1620. Are you rethinking decisions because of concerns about crime? We discuss in a moment. 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. Jeff, I was born and raised in Milwaukee. After we got married, lived there for many years. However, back in the late 80s, we moved to the suburbs because of crime, which compared to today's crime was basically nothing. I used to love to go to concerts downtown, Bucks games, and restaurants there. Sadly, we don't do that very often anymore. I can only imagine what a deterrent this will be for others who are coming to Milwaukee from up north to hear of this incident. And that, of course, is the party bus, this, you know, that's coming back. It's a limo. You know, it's one of those limo buses, and it's 12 people go to the Morgan Wallen concert. They're on 35th in Wisconsin, getting ready to get on the freeway about midnight last night, and they get caught in the middle of a gun battle. One of the windows on the bus gets shot out. Bullets go flying all around. Jeff, absolutely, this affects us, not only on day-to-day activities, and certainly no longer in certain areas, downtown, Brady Street, Capitol Drive, they're out. Jeff, that decision was made for us 2 years ago with all the car thefts and shootings. We don't do Milwaukee. I used to do win many free tickets to the State Fair, etc., shows at the Riverside. I just stopped because I end up not using them. Jeff, I do a lot of things differently these days. I don't drive downtown because I don't want break-ins or the car stolen. I usually go anywhere with a group now. I used to do more things that are solo. Jeff, my wife and I decided in 2016 that we would not go near Milwaukee night or day for anything. We used to regularly go to Admirals hockey, Bucks games, Brewers games, and concerts. Not anymore. I do this topic. There needs to be some recognition on the part of the mayor and the county executive and the county board and the Milwaukee Common Council that this is a huge issue. And you've got to get a handle on the crime problem, because stories like this kill businesses. They kill tourism. I always get a text from somebody saying, well, it's your fault because you're talking about it. No, look, trust me. Everybody in Green Bay knows what happened. I mean, they had a big news conference. This was prominently featured. Hey, we went to Milwaukee and we got involved in a shootout. I would say it's like the Wild Wild West, like one of those Western movies, except they were using real bullets. And everybody goes, oh my God, you know, you take a party bus down there, you're being responsible. You know, somebody else is driving and you get involved in a shootout at midnight on 35th and Wisconsin. Let's start with Lucy on the West Side. Lucy, you're on WTMJ.
Hi there. I think I get to talk about this partly because I live 8 blocks southwest of Marquette High School in the Merrill Park area on the other side of 35th Street. Your question was, how has this affected people's behavior? I still live here. I'm not leaving yet. I've been here 45 years. But my behavior's changed. I won't walk around not as far as I would with even with a dog with me after certain hours, especially as I get closer to 35th Street. We've had certainly problems within the neighborhood. I still feel okay to walk the dog up and down Park Hill. But I want to say a little bit about the crime and one impact that this is having on our neighborhood, too. It's not that the statistics on crime, it was actually worse in the 90s, and I remember it because I was here then, too. But it was the bad guys shooting each other in drug houses. Now, what's happened is everybody and his brother and sister-in-law has gone out and gotten a gun for, quote, protection. So that the slightest little tiffs turn into shootouts on the street. What used to be an argument is now a shooting. And I'm not sure anybody can reverse it as long as the human reaction is, oh, they're shooting everybody. I think I'll go get me a gun, too. Second, I mean, and another way that this has impacted our neighborhood, there's a person who wants to set up a tavern at 35th and Park, not Park Hill, 35th and St. Paul. 30 years ago, and I was here 30 years ago, I would have welcomed that. Fine, bring on a nice little neighborhood tavern. What's that going to hurt? now the whole neighborhood, not the whole neighborhood, but most of the whole neighborhood is up in arms, and this is going to be coming before the Common Council soon, so you may read about it. We're up in arms that we don't want an alcohol establishment located at 35th and St. Paul because of what we know it will bring. You bring in alcohol in a bar, you're going to bring the people with their guns and their fights.
That's really too bad.
And I don't I hate that.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, but it's really too bad. You got a guy who, or a person who, you know, wants to run a responsible tavern and thinks, okay, this would be a great, like, neighborhood place. And I understand the perspective of the neighbors, too. It's like, well, you're not going to be able to control this, and it'll be nothing but trouble in the parking lots, and you won't be able to control it. I understand what you're saying. It's just very unfortunate.
Yeah, and I'm going to be one of the people speaking against it. And that would not have been my attitude 30 years ago, even 20 years ago. But boy, it is now.
Yeah. No, Lucy, thanks for the call. And if that's how somebody who lives within 8 blocks of the area feels about this, I mean, I'm trying to imagine, okay, you're up in Green Bay, and our signal goes to Green Bay. We have lots of listeners in the Fox Valley who, you know, hear these stories about Milwaukee, and I understand some people would like to pass this off as though it's a media creation. No, it's not. I mean, you know, you've got... You mean the homicides numbers are the homicides. The car theft numbers are the car theft numbers. You have, I mean, as somebody who grew up in this area, the truth is my driving habits have changed. There are streets that I used to regularly take to go, say, from, you know, the east side out to Wauwatosa or out to, you know, Brookfield or whatever. I wouldn't dream of doing that now. It's just because you just never know what's going to happen because there's just so many problems that are out there. But, I mean, this particular story, I'm just trying to figure on people in Green Bay who already have some reservations about, you know, what's going on in Milwaukee. Say, wait, you went down to the concert. How was the concert? Oh, the concert was great, but, you know, we were involved in a shootout. What do you mean you were involved in a shootout? Yeah, these two cars, they get into an argument. It's midnight. People pull out guns. There's bullets flying all over. I think people hear that and they say, okay, well, we'll wait till the HBO special comes out to see him. Neil on the West Side. Neil, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. What do you think about all this?
You know, I was telling your screener, I think, well, the incident is terrible. It's very unfortunate. I think that, you know, people have to use good judgment. Going around wielding weapons is ridiculous. I think that you'll have just about everybody agree that the incident's terrible. I was calling like I told your screener, to pour some sunshine on the neighborhood aspect. My wife and I and our kids live very close to there. In the opposite direction of the previous caller, like around, you know, 44th and Juneau area, the Martin Drive neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We've had nothing but a fantastic experience there. But I feel like in listening to everyone else talk, I feel like the reason is, you know, we have a really strong neighborhood association. I think Merrill Park does too. Everybody kind of, you know, knows each other, sees other people walking. We've got, like, a lot of young families moving in. It's a diverse neighborhood where people of different races live right next door to each other. I mean, we've had a great experience there, and it's relatively quiet. We rented there, too, before we bought our house. We had a place on Martin itself. And, you know, I mean, there's some little crime. And once in a while, there is, like, you know, you hear about a shooting or something, like, I hear about this. And it does make you, it doesn't make me worried, because I guess I'm not out on Wisconsin Avenue at midnight.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. I think that sometimes, too, people that are doing that stuff are not, they're not from our neighborhood, you know. They're coming from other areas of town, like descending on it. And
I appreciate it. And by the way, no, I appreciate if your neighborhood is, you know, if you feel safe and comfortable there, and that's great. And I think you're right. You know, one of the keys to that is a strong neighborhood association and everybody looking out for everybody else. Unfortunately, That's not the case all over. And you know, you just look at the homicide numbers. You look at the, you know, car theft numbers. And certainly, I mean, there are, I appreciate it. There's some zip codes that are a lot worse than others. And I don't know that it's fair to say that crime is concentrated in certain areas, but crime is definitely worse in some areas than others, which is always one of the reasons why I've been an advocate for, you know, taking, you know, saturation police and patrols and, you know, just sending the cops into some of these high crime areas with instructions that, hey, we're going to start aggressively enforcing the laws. And I understand some people are uncomfortable with that, but I think that's kind of the key. And I guess the bigger point, though, is, you know, stories like this have the potential to kill areas and kill events. Because, I mean, Mike, this goes beyond just like one limo service that says we're not coming down to Milwaukee at night anymore. My guess is there's a lot of people that hear this story that say, boy, I'd really like to go to that concert. But, you know, I don't want to get caught in a gun battle on 35th in Wisconsin. And, I mean, if I could say this is this isolated event and shootings like this never happen, that would be one thing. But I don't think any of us can say that. So this is the party bus from somewhere short of heaven.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the show. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. I have one of whatever you can say about me, good or bad, there's no question that I have always been either blessed or cursed with the gift of self-awareness. That is, I understand who I am, and I understand, you know, what my strengths are, and I understand what my weaknesses are. So, I mean, I am painfully aware of that. There's lots of people who are just kind of, they go through life oblivious to, you know, their limitations and things like that. Or they don't recognize, oh, that this has happened, and it's they think, oh, this is no big deal or whatever. Somebody who is obviously not been either blessed or cursed with the gift of self-awareness is George Santos. Right? George Santos is the freshman Republican congressman from New York who, this is the guy that has made national attention. He's probably more well-known than any first-term congressman, certainly in this Congress, maybe forever. But it's not for the right reasons. It's one of these classic examples of people who say there's no such thing as bad publicity. Well, those folks have never had bad publicity. George Santos is the guy whose life has been a complete and total fraud, at least as far as the claims that he made. To get himself elected. He said he did this, he said he did that, and it turns out to be all BS. It's just pretty much all made up. And the more you get into the George Santos story, the more you find that the guy is just a major league fraudster. And it's entirely possible that he's going to end up getting charged with various crimes that he's committed over the course of scams he's pulled over the course of the last decade or so. But he somehow got himself elected to Congress. And can you imagine being the guy that lost to George Santos, how that has to feel? So anyhow, he's elected. You can't, unlike in Wisconsin where you can do recalls, you can't recall federal officials. So he is in Congress essentially unless he is indicted and convicted. And then, you know, then he could perhaps they could start impeachment proceedings against him, but effectively that would take a long, long time. And he's not going anywhere. Partly, my guess is because he's probably never legitimately made whatever it is that they pay congressmen, $150,000 or whatever that is. So he's hanging on to that job, if nothing else, for the dough that he's making and maybe because it gives him a chance to scam other people. So anyhow, but this is George Santos. And if there was ever a guy that screamed like one-term congressman, because now that everybody knows what a fraud he is, you would think that there's no way he would get reelected. In addition to that, there is this element. Every once in a while, you run into people who have absolutely no shame, just absolutely no shame. There was a story I was looking at yesterday or a couple of days ago about shoplifters, and we're going to do that as a bigger topic at some point in time tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, sometime. But there are the people who are like the chronic shoplifters, there's no secret as to who they are. Authorities know who they are. The stores know who they are. There's pictures of these people, and they just have no shame. They keep going back, and they keep stealing and stealing and stealing, and there's no shame at all. George Santos would be a great shoplifter because he has no shame at all. And he announced yesterday that he is running for re-election. In his statement for re-election, he didn't address all the controversies, namely the guy is an epic fraud. He instead, the story I'm looking at, says he depicted himself as a political outsider who would not get drawn into traditional Republican Party politics. Quote, we need a fighter who knows the district and can serve the people fearlessly and independent of local or national party influence. Good isn't good enough, and I'm not shy about doing what it takes to get the job done. You know, you might also say, I'm not shy about claiming to be whatever I think I have to claim to put myself in a position to get elected. I mean, if George Santos were to run for re-election today, what do you think? He gets maybe 10, maybe 15% of the vote, maybe. And that's kind of like the kook fringe that's out there. But George Santos, if you thought he was going to go away quietly, if you thought he should go away quietly, no way. He says he's running for re-election. Okay, I came back. I was on a plane 2 weeks ago tomorrow. And there is, of course, no mask mandate anymore. You don't have to wear a mask on the airplane. And I'm trying to think, going through the airport in Southwest Florida, I think I saw, well, I could definitely count the number of people who were wearing masks on one hand. Definitely that. On the plane that we were on, full plane, there are always full planes, I did not see one person who was wearing a mask. Because, I mean, they're not required and people are making those choices. I bring this up because a number of hospitals in medical facilities in southeast Wisconsin have just decided to end their mask mandate. When we got back like late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, 2 weeks ago, and I had an appointment, a lab appointment that Friday morning just to go get a blood test. And so I went in and I'd forgotten because I go to Frederick and they had a mask requirement. And so it was like, oh gosh, I had to actually consciously think, you know, I know we've got some masks around here. And I guess my attitude was, I thought, it was sort of silly. I just got off an airplane where, you know, nobody's wearing masks and stuff. And to go in to get some blood drawn, I got to put on a mask. But that's okay. If that's their rules, I'll follow them. And so I put on the mask and, you know, we went through this. But now what's happened is all these hospitals are dropping their mask requirements. Aurora Healthcare said masks in their facilities became optional on Monday. Frederick Hospital and Ascension began offering mask optional sometime last week, starting April 10th for Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin's health network. Ascension essentially doing the same thing. Aurora doing the same thing. Pro Healthcare loosened its mask requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, I don't want to go as far as to say at all health facilities, but at most health facilities, it's now become, under most circumstances, masks optional. Now, they say if you've got a respiratory illness or something like that, they ask you to mask up. But otherwise, it has now become optional. Our number is 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. Right, I am curious as to your reaction to this because, again, when I am out and about, I'm not saying I never see anybody wearing masks, but the number of people I see wearing masks, it is a very, very small percentage. Probably, you know, in most settings, certainly less than 5%, maybe a lot less than that. I don't think there was anybody on the plane, like I say, 2 weeks ago that were wearing it. So at this point in time, the medical facilities have now, I think, caught up with the reality that people are past masking. And people aren't wearing masks. My question is this too soon? Should medical facilities rethink this and say, you know what, because it doesn't matter if it's an airplane, okay, it doesn't matter if it's a grocery store, it doesn't matter if it's a baseball game. In those settings, it's fine to not wear masks, but we're medical facilities, and maybe we should make people wear masks all the time. 855-616-1620. Is this decision too soon? We discuss in just a moment. One of the final holdouts for mandatory masking has been healthcare facilities and hospitals. And as one of the big announcements over the course of the last week or two is almost all, and I'm not prepared to say all, but almost all of the major health providers have relaxed the mask rules, and they've gone to mask optional. Now, there's a couple exceptions, I would assume, if you're in like the chemotherapy unit or things like that. They're asking people who, for example, have respiratory problems, they're asking them to wear masks. But in general, if you're going in to get a blood test or you're going to have a regular office visit or whatever, you are no longer, at least at most of the medical facilities around southeastern Wisconsin, you are no longer going to be required to wear a mask. A number of people are texting in saying, what about the VA? All I can find is that the VA has announced that it is relaxed. This is from about a month ago. Relaxed the masking requirement at VA medical facilities. Moving forward, the VA will base its masking guidelines on VHA COVID-19 health protection levels, low, meaning medium, and high. And that essentially means it's going to be based on a particular community, and it will vary from community to community. All right, too soon, too late? Should we? And I can remember when we were having this conversation a year or two ago, there were a number of people who said, okay, we're never going to get out of masks. And moving forward, all hospital facilities, people are going to be required to wear masks. Well, they've moved off that. Are we doing the right thing? Let's start with Patty in Heartland. Patty, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, this is Patty.
Hi, Patty.
No, I think no masks.
Okay, tell me why.
Not too soon. Not too soon at all. I'm still a fresh air component. I think our bodies, in, as a natural instinct, just need air. I don't like it being restricted.
Yeah.
And I live between here and Arizona, and quite frankly, the hospitals in Arizona relaxed this rule quite a while ago already,
mm-hmm.
so where masks are optional.
Yeah, and
with the population in Phoenix, if they feel comfortable doing it, I feel comfortable doing it here, no problem.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Patty. Well, I mean, look, and again, it's going to be a function of a lot of things, and I don't know that this is necessarily a permanent thing. If you have an outbreak of COVID, maybe people will look at redoing this. But the truth of the matter is, you have a large number of people, not everyone, but a large number of people who have been vaccinated. As it gets into more and more into the population, I think our immunity builds up, and you don't have the COVID deaths that we had, years ago. So I think this is just a reflection of that. Plus, it's a reflection of the reality is that most people, don't want to wear masks. And I mean, I've been making this point for the longest time. It's if you decide you want to wear a mask, I don't look at you funny. I figure, okay, well, the person, either they're not feeling well themselves or they've got concerns about their own, immune system or whatever, and that's okay. I don't have any problem with people wearing masks. But the reality is, with most people in the general population who aren't doing it, most people who are going to the baseball games or going to, the Bucks games, or they're on the airplanes or they're in the large group gatherings, the overwhelming number of people aren't wearing masks. So, if you're coming in for a routine medical procedure, I'm going to go in and see my doctor for my regular checkup. I'm going to go to the lab because I want to find out what my blood numbers are or whatever. To say, okay, well, for this one instance, this one couple minutes, you've got to wear a mask. And if the idea is, well, you've got to do this to protect the medical personnel, well, my guess is, when they leave the work environment, they're going to the bars, they're going to the restaurants, they're going to the ball games, they're going to be out and about. So I think candidly, this is long overdue. And again, if I didn't object to it. I mean, I understood this was my medical provider. They said, if you want to come in, you got to wear the mask. That's okay. I wanted to come in. That was fine. I didn't mind doing it, but I always thought, especially now that at least the whole country has largely moved beyond masks, that to have a requirement that say, okay, if you're going to go in to give blood, or to have your blood checked, or again, without a situation where there's a specific need. Now, obviously, if you're going in because you're afraid you've got COVID or something like that, you want to be wearing the mask. but for just the general, hey, I feel healthy, I'm going in for my annual checkup, to say you've got to wear a mask, I always thought that was kind of a futile sort of thing, and to require the employees to all, you know, wear their masks inside the facility when they're dealing with people who aren't necessarily immune compromised or something like that. I always thought that this was kind of an exercise in, well, it was just, you were never going to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish. We've moved beyond masks. At least most of us have moved beyond masks. Whenever I say this, I get a couple texts from angry people who say, don't you understand? You know, we're all going to die, and it's going to be people like you fault for advertising or encouraging people to go out without masks. I'm just saying that this is, it is the world that we live in, and people make these kind of choices, and we're not going to be behind masks for the rest of our lives. If there's a reason for it, that's fine, but COVID is not a reason for it anymore. Even Joe Biden has declared that the national pandemic is over. Inflation, the return of the bear, 2023 sectors, and answering all your questions about it. Join Dave Spano from Annex Wealth Management, along with Wisconsin's Afternoon News host John McCure, for a special webinar, Inflation, Rate Hikes, and Bears. Oh my, it is tomorrow. That would be Wednesday, April 19th at 11 a.m. You can register for this free webinar. Still time to do it at WTMJ.com. Click on the Features tab and visit the Annex Wealth Management webinar page. Like I say, it is tomorrow morning. Hey, here's an interesting story from the world of politics. Tammy Baldwin has announced, of course, that she's going to run for re-election. No surprise there. The big question is, you know, which Republicans are going to emerge to challenge her? One of the names that I really hadn't heard, but one of the names that's out there is Tom Tiffany, who is the congressman from the 7th Congressional District, which is northwest Wisconsin. He hasn't announced that he is running, but what he's done is he's purchased domain rights for a couple websites, ThomasTiffanyForSenate.com and TomTiffanyForSenate.com. So he's buying the rights to those websites in case he decides to get in. Tom Tiffany is a great guy, and if he were to choose to get into the race, I think he would be a very, very formidable candidate. The problem, of course, is for any of these congressmen who make these runs, they've got to give up their seat. That's why some people have said, well, we heard that Mike Gallagher from, you know, the Green Bay area is considering running. I would be shocked if he gets in the race. I mean, he's a rising star in the House of Representatives, and you'd have to give up that seat to run for Congress. And you're running, you know, who knows what the state of politics is going to look like a year from now? Who knows what Wisconsin politics is going to look like for a year from now? Whenever you're running against an incumbent, that's always an uphill battle. I would be stunned if Gallagher gets into the race. Tom Tiffany, he'd have to give up his congressional seat as well, but he's apparently at least thinking about it. So that's a name to put in the back of your mind. For anybody who is a fan of the Saturday Night Live when it used to be funny, like in the beginning, you know, when you had the original cast like Gilda Radner and John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and stuff and Bill Murray, there are some skits that continue to be legendary. And one of the skits they have that is legendary is what they call the cheeseburger skit. And it's set in the fictional Olympia restaurant, which is actually a takeoff on the Billy Goat Tavern in Chicago. And there's a bunch of guys, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi, and they're there, and they're flipping burgers and things like that. And all they serve is, like, cheeseburgers. And so, like, John Belushi is the guy that's expediting the thing, and people come in and they'll go, cheeseburger, 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 chip. You know, that's the thing. And kind of the punchline is somebody will come in and say, I want a cheeseburger and I want a Coke. And it'll be cheeseburger with no Coke, Pepsi. That's kind of like one of the punchlines. It sounds funnier when they do that, but it's kind of become part of like American lexicon, you know, no Coke, Pepsi. And actually, interestingly, at the real Billy Goat Tavern in Chicago, they don't serve Pepsi. They only serve Coke. Now, I understand that this is, it's sort of like the old debate about, you know, who's prettier, Ginger or Marianne or whatever. But there is this ongoing debate. And for example, there's some people who say, I can't tell the difference between Pepsi and Coke. Nuts to that. I can tell the difference between Pepsi and Coke. I bring this up because they've just announced today or yesterday that Pepsi products, and matter of fact, let me kind of back into this. For years at Miller Park, yes, the old Miller Park, now American Family Field, Pepsi had the concessions. So if you wanted to get a soda at American Family Field, it was, or Miller Park, it was Pepsi products. I hate is a strong word. I do not care for Pepsi products. And I always used to struggle because it would be kind of the game's going on. I really don't want another beer or something like that. I'd like something to drink. I'd like a soda. But, you know, all you could get is like Diet Pepsi or Pepsi. I didn't care for that at all. And about 2 years ago, they changed. And now it's Coke products at American Family Field. And I will tell you, I'm much happier because, to me, there is a huge, huge difference. I bring this up because they announced earlier this week, yesterday, Pepsi products will continue to be sold at Camp Randall Stadium and the Kohl Center for another 6 years. The University of Wisconsin Athletic Department and Pepsi-Cola of Madison Monday announced a contract renewal through the 2028-2029 season. Five-year deal. Okay, it used to be if you went to either a basketball game at UW or you went to Camp Randall, it was Coke. And then there was a period of 4 or 5 years where they dumped Coke and they had a deal with Dr. Pepper Snapple as their soda provider, with Dr. Pepper 7-Up and RC Cola at their concession stands. I am not a fan of RC Cola otherwise. Before that, it was Coca-Cola. But now it's so in 2018, they did a deal with Pepsi-Cola. Pepsi apparently paid UW $140,000 per year for the rights to sell Pepsi products and provided bottled water for department use. So this new contract will pay UW $200,000 per year in what they call pouring rights starting next season. So for the next 5 years, it's going to be no Coke Pepsi still at the UW games. All right, I understand this is not the most significant issue of the day, but still, I think it's an issue that people feel strongly about. Our number is 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. When I go to places, I am a Coke guy. I'm actually a Diet Coke guy, and I taste the huge difference. I think Pepsi or Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, whatever, I think the stuff is way too sweet, and I do find myself, you know, if you go to a place and you say, okay, I want a cheeseburger and I want a Coke, or I want a cheeseburger and a Diet Coke, and the response I get is, well, we don't have Coke, it's Pepsi products. What I end up doing is saying, okay, let me think about what plan B is. Maybe I'll have a coffee, maybe I'll have tea, maybe I'll have something else, because I really just don't care for this. And it's, some people view this as just kind of interchangeable. It doesn't matter whether it's Pepsi or Coke. I don't think so. I think Coke is much, much better, and I'm glad they're selling Coke at American Family Field, and I'm sorry that they're not going to be selling it at Camp Randall. 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. Let's take on one of the most pressing issues of the day, Coke or Pepsi. And are you disappointed when the restaurant you go to, when the event you go to, doesn't have your preferred brand? Or doesn't it make any difference? It all tastes the same. In which case, I think something's wrong with your taste buds. 855-616-1620. We discuss in just a moment. It's the real thing. Yeah. The reason I bring this up, it really shows how much money is involved in this. Camp Randall Stadium, UW System, has just announced for Wisconsin basketball games in Camp Randall, they have re-upped their contract. You can only get Pepsi products there, and that's going to be the deal for the next 5 years. To show how valuable this stuff is, it's $200,000 a year. $200,000 a year for the rights there. On the flip side, and a number of people are pointing this out in texts, Culver's recently flipped from Pepsi to Coke. American Family Field flipped from Pepsi to Coke a year or two ago. I'm a Diet Coke guy. I taste a huge, huge difference. And I'm one of these people that, you know, if I'm at a place and they only have Pepsi products, then I'll go, okay, how about iced tea? How about coffee? How about something else? 855-616-1620. Tony in Northwest Milwaukee. Tony, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Tony.
Jeff, I'm a Diet Coke guy like you. Pepsi's too sweet. But, Jeff, I worked at the plant on Brown Deer Road, the coke plant, for 12 years. And I got to tell you, when we ran Diet Coke, and I could grab one off the line filled at 32 degrees in the summer, Jeff, that was heaven, man.
the ice cold Diet Coke. No, thanks for the call. I get it. I mean, it's... You know, and it's funny because when I was younger, like when I was in college and stuff, back before I went to like diet sodas, I used to drink Pepsi and I liked it a lot. But somewhere along the line, I switched over. I started drinking Diet Coke, and one of the things that and now if I have a regular soda, it's just it tastes so very very sweet. The one exception is Sprecher root beer. Sprecher root beer, I will treat myself. Every once in a while, but just once in a while. Let's talk to Guy in Brookfield. Guy, you're on WTMJ.
Yeah.
Hi, Guy.
It's called a Roman Coke, not Roman Pepsi.
So if somebody walks into a bar and says I want a rum and Pepsi, they're going to look at you strangely, aren't they?
There you go.
No, we're
there. It is.
That's kind of actually. In some ways, that might be the definitive ending, the definitive closure to the Ginger or Mary Ann concert thing. Is it Pepsi or is it Coke? It's rum and Coke. It's not rum and Pepsi. You don't go in and say rum and RC Cola. There was a restaurant that I used to patronize that had their soda, their cola of choice was RC. And I think it was because the owner of the restaurant had sort of a personal relationship with one of the RC distributors or bottlers or whatever, but it was kind of like, you know, who drinks RC Royal Crown Cola anymore? 855-616-1620. Rakesha in West Bend, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hi, Jeff. This is Lucretia.
Lucretia, got it. Hi.
And actually, I do prefer Diet Coke over Pepsi. And when they don't have that, because Pepsi is so sweet, my go-to is... When they had Diet Coke and lime,
right?
That's such a great combination. So when they have Pepsi, I switch to the Diet Pepsi and lemonade, and that gives me that same kind of combination of that Diet Coke and lime that they had. It's really a great combination that they don't have anymore.
Yeah, you're talking about with the artificial lime flavoring in the sodas. Okay, can you tell a difference? If I sat you down, put a blindfold on you, and put... You know, two sodas in front of you, poured into glasses, you're confident you could tell the difference between the Diet Coke and the Diet Pepsi, or the Coke and the Pepsi?
Absolutely. Diet Pepsi is way too sweet. I agree with you on that. Way too sweet.
Yeah, thanks for calling. It's funny. I mean, and again, I understand some people might like that taste. It's just, I just think there's a definitive... You know, difference for that. Jeff, I don't think Culver's is as busy since the switch to Coke. No, if you're going into, I mean, I don't know how busy Culver's is, but I can't imagine. I'm not going to go to Culver's and order one of those butter burgers because, you know, they've got Pepsi, not Coke. No problems. Jeff, I promise to keep listening to your show, even though your cola preferences leave much to be desired. All right. See, I understand. It's throwing down the gauntlet when you say this. Jeff, I am totally a Pepsi girl. I feel Coke is much sweeter and syrupy. Huh. This show's taste buds are just different. I love the fizz of Pepsi. I do recognize that Coke is usually more popular, but I think it's because more places sell it, so it's what people are comfortable with. I'm glad about this with UW because we have season tickets for many sports there. I did not like it when they had the RC stuff either. Yeah. You know, the other thing is there's I know people are getting drawn into like the Coke Zero and stuff. I just that kind of leaves me. That sort of leaves me cold. I mean, I'm kind of a Diet Coke guy all the way. Okay, let's hear from a different perspective. Kurt in Appleton. Kurt, you're on WTMJ.
Hey, well, I'm your guy. I'm kind of the opposite of where you are. If I go to a restaurant and my choice is the choice there is Coke, I'm drinking water. And I guess a good example of this, Culver's. I was a previously very reliable customer at Culver's. I went there. In fact, I looked this up because I pay for it with my debit card. I went there 180 times in 2022. When I walked into my local Culver's January 17th and found Coke, that I haven't been back since.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Huh. If I get the hankering for a malt or a cement mixer, I might be back in there. But I would go there 3 to 4 times a week, And honestly, I have not been there since the middle of January this year.
And it's because I go
around the country. I seek out a culvert. I went to one in St. George, Utah. But yeah,
it's because of the Pepsi versus Coke thing. You feel that strongly about it?
Well, I have my routine. I have usually something virtuous, like they have a really healthy, wonderful cashew chicken salad, and my indulgence would be the Pepsi, and I get the refill before I go. Now that that's
okay,
Coke, it's like, no, thank you.
Huh. That's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that people feel that strongly about it because, like I say, when I would go to Brewers games and, you know, they only serve Pepsi products, and as expressed, I'm not a fan of that stuff. I mean, it's not like I wouldn't go to the Brewer. I'm not going to the Brewer. I wouldn't take them. Oh, I'm not going to go to the, I'm not going to that playoff game because, you know, they've got Pepsi instead of Coke. I don't feel that strongly about, you know, that I wouldn't go or I wouldn't patronize a particular place. And if I like the Culver's double cheeseburgers and the onion rings, the fact that, you know, you get, you know, Pepsi with it or Coke or vice versa wouldn't stop me. But I mean, obviously it does make a difference. I think the majority of places probably have Coke instead of Pepsi, but maybe that's why the people who are Pepsi adherents are just so passionate about it. Let's talk to, let's go to Carrie. Oh, that's me. Let's go to Carrie in West Dallas. Hi, Carrie. You're on WTMJ. Carrie? Okay, let's try Larry in Columbus. Larry, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm on the other side of the pond with you.
Okay.
I'm totally a Pepsi person. I don't like Coke. If I go to a place that has Coke, I guess I'll have a root beer or something else.
Okay.
Maybe a iced tea or something like that.
Yeah. So but we are
like
the flip
Pepsi
side.
And that's it.
Yeah. No, thanks. Yeah. Larry, we are the flip side. Because like I say, if I'm at a place that has Diet Pepsi, I'm looking at alternatives. I'm looking at iced tea or something like that. It's interesting. You mentioned root beer. This is one, if my doctor is listening, you'd be very proud of me because, you know, I don't like the caffeine-free Diet Coke. I mean, if I'm going to have the Diet Coke, I want it with the caffeine in it. So what I've started doing is it's the A&W sugar-free root beer. It has nothing in it. You know, and I'm not saying if you you put it up to next to a Sprecher root beer and it's kind of root beer in name only, but it's become my drink of choice because it's got no caffeine in it and it tastes sort of like root beer. And so that's kind of become my go-to. It's tougher to find that than some of the other stuff. I found it in the store the other day and I bought 4 12-packs and my wife's going, huh, we got enough to last you for a while. I said, well, you don't want to run out.